Hello and welcome to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast, your source for school-based occupational therapy tips, interviews, and professional development. Now, to get the conversation started, here is your host, Jason Davies. Class is officially in session.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 104 of the OT Schoolhouse Podcast. My name is Jason. I'm so happy to be here with you today. This episode is actually being released on July 5th, which is one day after July 4th, which, of course, is always a good time for everyone, at least I hope. And also 2 days after my birthday, which this year I got to celebrate at my cousin's wedding. So that was a lot of fun. Today is July 5th. I'm actually probably going to be celebrating my birthday today. We'll see. And of course, my son is now three and a half months old. So we're just having a great start to the summer here at the OT Schoolhouse, myself, my wife, my baby Kyler, and I hope you are as well. And maybe you're listening to this later. It's fall, winter, spring, who knows? You know, I just want to say we have a great episode for you here today, and I really do hope you enjoy it. Today, we are bringing on Laura Pettix. She is the OT Butterfly, and I could not have enjoyed the conversation you are about to hear more. We got into so much just amazing stuff. She is not a school-based OT, but she is a pediatric OT, and she is using everything that she learned through occupational therapy school, through her occupational therapy practice, helping kids with sensory processing disability. And she has taken that and she has started a business where she is now supporting parents, supporting kids through their parents all online. And she is just doing it in a very genuine, very occupational therapy way. And I could not share this episode with you. She is just an amazing person. She's doing a lot for occupational therapy, and she's doing even more for the clients that she serves. So we're going to talk a little bit about how her Instagram has just blown up and how she's just sharing occupational therapy with the world through her business. But we're going to really get down into the nitty-gritty about how she is specifically supporting those clients that she works with. Also, at the end, stay tuned, especially if you're a huge Disneyland fan, because we talk about how she's actually incorporating Disney into her business. Hint, it has to do with sensory processing disorder, so you're not going to want to miss that. You know, I'm not going to waste any more of your time. I really want you to hear this interview, so please just put that phone away if you haven't already and enjoy this episode with Laura Pettix. I hope you enjoy it. Hey, Laura, welcome to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jason. It's good to see you finally. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, definitely. It has been a true blessing, a true honor, just overall fun watching the OT Butterfly grow on Instagram. And now you have a podcast, and that's crazy. How are things going?
Oh, everything is going well. And yeah, this is not where I intended the OT Butterfly to go, but here I am. And that's how the best things turn out, right? But yeah, it's really good to have such a direct impact with parents. So that's something that's very exciting for me every day. And I'm very grateful for all of the different dips and turns I've taken along my way to get here, because it all happens for a reason, right? So I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. And we're going to dive all into that. But first, you know what? I just want to give you a chance to share a little bit of background about maybe how you got to where you were just a few years ago as you started the OT Butterfly in your OT career.
Yeah. So I am a pediatric occupational therapist, and I have only ever worked in a clinic, in a private sensory integration clinic. That was where my second field work was, and that's where I was hired in the Bay Area. And I stayed there up until right before the pandemic. And so I started the OT Butterfly in, I think, February of 2019, when I was creating a lot of resources for my own clients at work. I just love creating very tailored, specific things for them, whether it was like a very specific pirate-themed calendar for this child to get ready for school, or a Paw Patrol cutting activity to motivate one of my clients. And I was always creating this stuff. And then I stumbled upon Teachers Pay Teachers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to put some stuff on there. And so one thing led to another. And I thought it was just going to be this little cute side hobby that once I got into it, I got very, very obsessed with making it like this fun thing, and it consumed so much time. And it was truly one of the only moments that I experienced flow of where I lost track of time, what I learned in grad school. And I was like, this is what it feels like. And it was just this perfect merge of hobby, but like productivity, which is definitely my like type A everything. And this was before, I already had my daughter at this time, but I was in this perfect lull where I had just enough time to be bored after work and after momming hours, where I was like, what do I do with this free time? And I spent all that time on there. And turns out when you make a TPT store, you also have to, you know, support it with a Pinterest account and a blog and Instagram to showcase all of that. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll start an Instagram. I really don't want to, but they're not going to know about my Teachers Pay Teacher store. So I'll just do that, but like not spend too much time onto it. And yeah, so I spent the first like year and a half focusing on my resources catered to other occupational therapists, mostly PDFs, downloads, Teachers Pay Teacher stuff. And then perfect storm of events. My husband got a new job, so we had to leave the Bay Area like the week before the world shut down. So I had this like time to like be out of the clinic. I was like in between jobs because I didn't know what I was, which clinic, how, where I was going to work. And then it all just fell into place as more and more parents started finding me on Instagram and asking what is going on with my child, because these were things they weren't seeing because their kids were at school all day or they never really had to fill so much of their time supporting their child through virtual school with all of these sensory stuff that they're like, what do I do? And so very much took a very quick turn like in summer of 2020 when I started to focus talking to parents more. And that's where I have found my calling. I found my people. I truly feel like if I won the lottery today, I would still be doing this because it's so meaningful to me and so impactful.
That's great. That is great. You know, as occupational therapists, you know, we naturally, I think, have that desire to help as many people as we can. And whether you're working in a school, in a clinic, in a hospital, whatever setting that is, you're physically there and your time is taken every time you are seeing a person. And being online, I know you do work with people one-on-one, but anytime you post something on Instagram, it's one to so many. And I know this isn't a business podcast, but it's so exciting to see your Instagram just blow up. I mean, I remember when you just had, you know, a few hundred, then a few thousand, and now you're like 65, 70,000. Yeah, I think you were one of
the first people I reached out to in the beginning because you were already well established at that point. So yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So, all right. So you started off in a pediatric clinic and then you decided to start a TPT store and went from there. I got to ask, why the OT butterfly? How did that come to be?
Yeah. So I remember trying to think of a name for my store and I was thinking of like pretty like OT puns that I was trying to go for and it just didn't like stick. And I like almost kept forgetting my names. Like I think if anyone has some of my first free downloads that they got like that first week, they're going to have like three different like copyright names at the bottom because I like came up with a bunch of random like hands-on stuff, like very pun OT stuff. And I was like, I can't even remember what the name is at that time to like get people to download. I was like, this isn't going to work. And then it just came to me one day. So butterflies are a pretty significant symbol in my family. And from talking to a lot of other people, this is very common for a lot of cultures and a lot of families. But in my family, I'm Filipino. In my family, my mom, we grew up always seeing butterflies as like people who have passed away, like relatives. So whenever you would see a butterfly, my mom would be like, oh, there's your uncle so-and-so like watching over you. Like we have a lot of actually family stories of like near-death experiences, but then like a butterfly is somehow like in the environment or like lands on that person and like they almost drowned and they didn't drown. Like it's crazy stories. But so butterflies have been symbolic in that perspective. But then my grandma loved butterflies, like wallpaper butterflies, bed sheets butterflies. She had a restaurant called the Butterfly Cafe. She had iced tea called Butterfly Iced Tea. Like she was Miss Butterfly. I drew butterflies for her all growing up. So, and the like a few months before I started my TPT store, she passed away. So she was very like in the front of my mind. And so it just all made sense. And then even after the fact, I was like, this is actually a really good metaphor for our clients and for the families we work with as they transform into like independent butterflies and they fly off. And I was like, this just fits all around. And now I love it.
Absolutely. And actually, you have your own little butterfly at home, your daughter. This is a great little segue. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your daughter and also how she has actually played a little bit of a role within the OT Butterfly?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Liliana. So she is my one and only. She is almost five now. And she, from the beginning, was not meant to be part of this whole thing, but she really is now. Like, no one can see this, but she is like the face of the OT Butterfly. Yeah. I have pictures of her all over the place because she's a very clear representation of the kinds of kids I am trying to help and to serve and support. So she is, she's almost five. Like I said, she is neurodivergent. She has anxiety and sensory processing disorder. So she needs a lot of support for emotional regulation and just getting through a lot of stuff in her day. But from when I first started my Instagram and I was still focusing on TPT stuff, I felt so awkward on stories, on Instagram stories. And I'm like, I don't know how to talk to people. And so I would like have her next to me as my little sidekick. And it kind of like broke the ice. And people, I got way more views. People were asking questions about her. Like, they loved her little voice. So I was like, you are my secret weapon. And that was before I really totally knew she was neurodivergent. Uh-huh. I didn't start seeing signs for her until she was around, like, I mean, I'd say I always did, but it didn't start falling into place until she was like 13, 14 months. So as my journey with her started unfolding, I shared a lot of that with my audience. And that really mm-hmm. built a close connection with everyone. So right now where it stands, we are going through our second round of like evaluations. The first time we tried to go this route was like when she was two, and then all of everything happened with pandemic, and we've kind of been getting by. And, you know, I've been using all my OT tools as much as I can. But now as she approaches kindergarten, it's clear that she still needs more support. And I'm hoping to get that. So we are going through evaluations through our insurance and through the school. So I very much understand what parents are going through, because it has not been an easy route, even for someone like myself, who is so well connected and understands the whole process. So yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, myself as a school-based OT, you know, I have a 3-month-old or just about 3-month-old now. And I have I've said this to people that I've worked with, to people that are very close to me. And it's one of those things where you almost don't want to say it out loud, but like I have kind of said, you know, I will have totally no problem at all if I have a student with special needs. But man, I feel bad for the school district if I have a student with special needs, because I know everything.
Yeah. Like, you do not want me as a client. No, I try. Exactly right. I try to like always be in both sides. Right. And be like, I'm very empathetic of the tasks that you guys have to go through to qualify students, but also like, let's skip all of that stuff, because I know, wow, we really know why I'm here. Like, I wouldn't be bringing my daughter to these appointments and doing this just for fun, mm-hmm. right? Like, I know she needs XYZ. So yeah, hopefully you don't have to deal with this fight. You don't have to fight this fight for your son, but you would be the best advocate for him if that Absolutely. Time comes.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, are there any specific stories going on right, or any specific situations that you wouldn't mind sharing right now?
Yeah. Oh gosh. Okay. So, well, the most recent is like just a couple hours ago. I just got off the phone with her principal. She's starting a year-round school. So I don't know when this is going to come out, but she is starting school on July 14th. And she is just in pre-K right now going, she's in a private pre-K and she's going to our local public school. And based on her needs, her anxiety is what really drives the sensory. So she is a people pleasing, super charismatic, super funny, like not super shy. She will like talk to anybody. But when she is anxious about things that are unknown to her or things that are unexpected, it comes out as a lot of, first of all, her sensory stuff gets like heightened in that moment. And she has really big emotional dysregulation stuff. So my husband is always like, how does she go from 0 to 100? And I'm like, she's not at 0. She's at like 75. Like constantly, you just don't see it, yeah. right? That's how I explain it to him and other parents. I'm like, they're never just at this regulated. She's just got this internal state of arousal that's always kind of up and mm-hmm. ready to just go into fight or flight mode at any moment. And so I am trying to take off as much of that cognitive load for her before school starts by answering these unknown, because she's like, what's my teacher's name? What does she look like? What's my classroom going to look like? All of the curious things that a lot of mm-hmm. kids ask. But for her, these unknowns can really be deep-seated and have her perseverate on these things so much that she can't really focus on anything else that a almost 5-year-old should focus on. And then we have really big meltdowns at home. So my point of talking to her principal was I was asking him for a certain set of accommodations before school starts. I was asking if we could find out who her teacher is before. And she is at her school. There is 4 kindergarten classes. There's 2 a.m. and then like 2 p.m. classes. So I'm like, I need to know which time her class starts, who her teacher is going to be. I need a picture of her teacher because I'm going to create a social story. And I needed time to walk through the classroom before school starts so she can like have that body movement of walking through and visualizing what it's going to be like. Yeah. Because I 100% am that person. I have anxiety as well. I'm the person who looks up like the directions in Google Maps, but like the street view of like where I'm going. And I look up what parking lots look like before I go somewhere because yeah. I have this like anxiety. And then when I'm driving, I can't focus. Like it is very real. So I think I'm an even better advocate for my daughter because I have anxiety as well. So that conversation was just asking for those. And then I shared with him that we are currently going through evaluation process with our insurance, trying to get her seen by a developmental pediatrician, fighting so hard for OT, and also getting evaluated for play therapy. And so he actually very much surprised me. Maybe I'm just jaded from hearing all of the horror stories, but he surprised me in being proactive about setting her up for a 504 plan. Like I was very much approaching this as like, I'm asking for these accommodations, quote, off the record to meet her teacher. If you can't meet that for me, I will go the 504 plan route, the more legal route, the more red tape route, which I know as a school, like it's not always like you'd rather avoid that if you can. Right.
Yeah.
So I was ready to like use that as my leverage, but he was like, yep, we can do that for you. And, you know, since you already have these evaluations in place, why don't you bring that when you walk your daughter through the school and we'll add that and we'll get the process started for a 504 plan. So you can just be ready if you need it. And I'm like, that's amazing. So I was not even expecting that. And I'm very happy to hear that.
That's awesome. No, that's great. You know, I agree with you to the extent, you know, the red tape, trying to avoid it and do things a little bit hush hush on the backside without doing the 504. But at the same time, I completely would advocate for like he is doing for that 504, because if you don't put that 504 in place at the beginning, then the next time you as the mom comes in and you might ask for something else. And then you come in and maybe you ask for something else. And it's nothing that you shouldn't ask for. You absolutely should. But if that 504 isn't already put in place, then it just looks like someone's just asking for more and more. But once you put that 504 in place, now it's on paper, it's documented, it's official. Yeah. And if they need more, if she does one day need more, it's already there and documented. So I think that's a great, awesome.
Yeah. So I was very pleasantly surprised with that. So that I feel like is a gift from the universe because I have been fighting so hard with our insurance to get her the medical route type of OT, right? Because she definitely does need some outpatient sensory integration type work to help with her regulation. And yes, I am very qualified to do this, but I don't think unless you're a parent out there, you don't understand that dynamic of like mom to child is not the same as therapist to child. And I have all of my tools in place at home, but I need more and I cannot be her therapist too. Yeah, so that's agreed. What I've been fighting for.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, I've been watching some of those. So anyone who's listening, go over to the OT Butterfly on Instagram, and Laura puts all of her stories into those nice little neat highlights.
And right. She talks I have all one called Eval. So
Eval?
Go to the highlight called Eval and you'll see all of the mess that I get to deal with. But yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I want to move on, but you actually mentioned something, and hopefully this will probably be a pretty quick answer. You mentioned creating social stories for Liliana. Do you use a specific tool for that?
Yeah, I use the Social Story Creator Library on iPhone. I don't know if they have it on Android. I keep saying that and no one has ever responded because I feel like most of the people I talk to have iPhones, but it has a person holding a pink book. And I love this tool. If I don't use this, well, she was little. She used to like flipping through pages. So I've done like cut and paste, laminate type social stories, right? Yeah. But she's very much into like hearing herself talk and seeing herself. So if I don't create like an actual social story in this app and I'll talk about what I love about it, I will record a video of her talking to herself in the future, which has been so helpful because she loves that.
That's so awesome.
She'll say like, Liliana, tomorrow when you wake up, remember it's pack up day at school and you're usually nervous. Remember, mom said you can take a deep breath. So like she's just talking to herself. And then in the morning, I'm like, hey, someone has a message for you. And I'll like play that video of her. I use that for like all transitions.
That's great.
Everything when it's like a very predictable meltdown, there's like a 90% chance of meltdown. I'm like, wait, let's record you. But so the social story creator library, you can take pictures, which I love for all social stories. I much prefer like the actual photo of the child, of the environment, of the everything. You can take photos and then you can type in the words, but then you can record your voice or the child's voice saying the phrase or whatever that is. And then they can watch the social story like unfold. So it's like a That's digital awesome. Version, and you can take this like anywhere. So I love that too. That's what we use at home.
That's great. Yeah. As you were talking, I was going to ask about potentially using like YouTube social story type of things, but even better if she's creating her own social story for herself to watch.
You know, I spent so many hours trying to find like specific scenario YouTubes for my own clients. And I'm just like, if you can just go and like take pictures yourself of your child and at the dentist, like this is going to be way more effective and relevant for your child. So I started doing that. And yeah, it works like a charm for my daughter.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, anytime you can make it more custom, more personalized to your environment, to your person, I'm just thinking of the PEO model, right? Person, environment, occupation. If you can wrap those up and make it as customized to the client or your child as possible.
Oh my gosh. I haven't heard that in years. You're triggering some PTSD from like flashcards studying that. I have not even uttered those words in so long, but yes, you're right.
Yeah. The PEO model. That's the one that always comes back to me. I couldn't tell you a thing about Moho. That's like the one that always like,
I used Moho. A lot, but what stuck with me, and I used a lot in my, when I was in mental health for like my, I think it was my first field work. I used the Kawa model a lot.
I heard you.
And I use that a lot with kids. Yes.
Yeah.
And that one stuck with me a lot. And I've like tailored that a lot for some of my older kids working with like emotional regulation and worries and stuff. We've used the Kawa model for like some of my like fifth and sixth grade ones. So that one stuck with me. But the other, those are more like the PEO and like all that stuff like is very blurry to me. So don't test me on that.
Understandable. We all, you know, we come out of university, out of school, and it's not meant to. We're not meant to retain everything. We're meant to retain the things that we know that we can go back to and learn more about if we need to. So, yeah.
I honestly learned like 95% of what I know from like my field work too. Like my mentors were everything that's to great. Me. And so, yeah, that made a huge difference for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Man, I keep going back and forth. I want to move on to the next question, but then you say something. I'm like, I want to know more about that. But you know what? We'll keep going. So, we talked a little bit about at the beginning, and then we started talking a little bit about more about your family and Liliana, but let's go back. How do you explain what you're doing as a business right now? If you had to kind of, you know, that elevator pitch a little bit, what are you doing?
Yeah. So I teach parents how sensory processing impacts learning and behavior in their children. And I do that mostly through one-on-one parent coaching or my online parent program. And just recently, I'd say in the past 3 months to 6 months, I've even more niched down and like solidified my expertise in the space of, I call it like gentle parenting with a neurodivergent twist, because everybody online right now, gentle parenting is such a buzzword. It's often misused. It's often like misunderstood, but I've found a way to translate that where it applies to neurodivergent parents. And most of the parents I work with are parents of sensory sensitive children. So if we're talking about SPD and all of the different profiles, sensory sensitivity is the one that hits closest to home. It's the one I have the most experience working with in my practice and at home. So I spend most of my time talking to those parents. But in general, I love teaching parents about how sensory processing impacts their child's behavior and learning.
Awesome. That's, well, I just know that you're helping many, many people because of your Instagram following. But let's dive deeper more into actually your, I guess, the clientele you're actually working with, not just the ones that are following you on Instagram. You said you do that in two different ways. You have one-to-one mentoring, and then you also have a program. Let's start with the program, and then we'll get more into the one-to-one. What does that program look like?
Yeah, so I have a parenting program that is, it's a course and a program kind of mixed in one. So it's this course with lessons and modules teaching them the why behind sensory, their child's behaviors, why behind the behaviors. It teaches them how to identify their child's specific triggers and like goals based on where their current like baseline level is. I teach them how to set long-term goals, short-term goals, and then like identify their baseline level. And then I teach them about sensory strategies daily at home just to get them as regulated as possible before school, you know, to try to avoid as many meltdowns as possible, how to come out of a meltdown with sensory strategies. Mm-hmm. And then I teach them how to engage in the Just Right Challenge. And I use a ladder to depict the Just Right Challenge. And I teach parents how to create their own Just Right Challenge ladder for the most common sensory sensitive triggers. So I talk about sensitivity to clothing, sensitive to loud sounds or busy environments, sensitivity to grooming activities, which includes like hair cutting, hair brushing, hair washing, toothbrushing, nail cutting, and also picky eating. And so those four pillars spell out WISE. So that's where I get the WISE in Sensory WISE Solutions, which is the name of my podcast and the program. And so I send parents weekly emails for 16 weeks to get them to keep up with the lessons and watch it weekly. And then they also get a private community full of other parents of sensory sensitive children. So it's off of Facebook, but it's the same idea where there's like a forum and you can ask questions, share wins, all of that. And then we also have five group coaching calls throughout that 16 weeks. So I go heavy on the course program, the videos, the lessons for 10 weeks. But then for 6 weeks after that, I specifically leave time for group coaching for questions, because the one thing I have a gripe about for a lot of like take and go courses is like, you either like binge the content and then like you don't remember it, because I do that all the time. I get so excited to learn something and then I'm like, wait, where was that lesson on blah, blah, blah. Right. You either binge it, two, you forget about it, or three, you take it, but then after you have all these questions for the creator, like for it to fit your child. And if it's a take and go course, that creator doesn't really have the obligation to like spend time answering your questions and helping you through it. So I build in like 6 weeks of like troubleshooting as they learned how to use the Just Right Challenge. And I could give them examples like, oh, that didn't work for your child. Maybe that wasn't the Just Right Challenge. Let's talk about it. So it's really a course and program built into one. But now I'm on like the fourth cohort of it. And it's been so successful. And parents feel so empowered. And it's just, it's really transformed how I work with my in-person clients as an OT. Really, really trying to pull the parents on board, because like seeing how much progress parents can make at home without OT. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have OT in person and you can do this, like it's like a huge thing unlocked. So that's my one main parent program. It's like awesome. A course with a program mixed together.
Yeah. You know, I don't do cohort based for my courses. They are self-paced, but I do give people a few things to add on. I make sure that A, they have lifetime access, so that way they can go back in and access it whenever they need to. But we also do live collaboration hours. So every other week I hop on and just do live Q&A with anyone. And so I absolutely agree, right? That's you need amazing. To have that application side of it. You can't just, especially in science fields, right? You just can't take something and walk away.
There's so many parenting courses, like bedtime stuff, meltdown stuff, that's just like a take and go.
Yeah.
And so I really, because like sensory is so, I mean, every child is different, period. But when we're talking about sensory stuff, it really does take some practice and troubleshooting. And yeah, they get access to the course for a lifetime. I just pace them through, and then the community is only for 16
weeks. That's
perfect.
That's really cool. Okay. As OTs, I like to think we are some of the most ethical people in the world. And sometimes it almost, it doesn't backfire on us, but like it makes running a business, in my opinion, a little tricky, because you almost want to give everything away for free, because you know these people who have a child with SPD, they need so much support. But at the same time, we have to keep in mind our license and all that. And when it comes to sensory, you kind of mentioned, you know, sensory is very unique to an individual, obviously. So I know this is helpful. You just mentioned you're helping hundreds, thousands of parents. How do you grapple with that whole, here is a course and, you know, it's a video, it's recorded, it's not specific to your child, but at the same time, I'm here, I'm giving you this course and I want to help you. How does that work out for you?
Yeah. So my number one huge value to me through everything I do as a business owner is always being transparent, almost to the point where some, like my business coach sometimes is joking. She goes like, are you even trying to sell this course? Or are you trying to like not sell it because you have so many disclaimers of like, this isn't for you, this isn't for you. But I'm very, very transparent of like, this is not occupational therapy. Like in my frequently asked questions, it's like, will my child still need OT outside of this? I can't tell you. I will always 110% advocate for you to have your child be seen in person. I can't see your child. This is all education-based. What I do is, how I explain it is, I'm giving the parents kind of like if I were to take off my OT glasses and like lend it to them, like, here's what I see. Yeah. You put this on and tell me what you see. And you can explain it to me and I'll give you three different examples of why that thing could be happening, which one sounds like it applies to your child. And they're like, oh, it sounds like this. So we'll talk about it. But I have a bunch of things reminding them that this is really just giving them the tools to understand their child's behavior more, or at least know what to question about their child's behavior. Mm-hmm. Just really giving them the framework to look through versus like, that's why I don't have a lot of strategy-based courses. I don't have like, here's what to do for sensory seekers. Like I really don't. I'm doing that, I do a lot of parent one-on-one parent coaching, and I'm also very specific. Like, I am not seeing your child. I am not assessing your child. Mm-hmm. Based on what you're telling me, here are two or three or four different things that could work for a general sensory seeker. You decide what works best for your kid. So I'm like overly communicative in that way, so that I know by the time a parent puts in their PayPal or like sends that, like, you know, purchases something, they've gone through like three or four disclaimers, like, this is not going to do like X, Y, and Z. So that's why my business coach is always like, are you really trying to sell this? I'm like, yes, I can't take that like scam. We'll fix your kid, or like no meltdowns in like 10 days. Like I hate all of that stuff. I just really want what I'm selling and what I can guarantee a parent will walk away with after consult call, after my program, after everything, is you will know more after this about your child than you did before. And I can very confidently say that without feeling like I would let someone down. Like, I promise you, I will teach you something that you did not already know about sensory and how that applies to your child. And you'll walk away with at least one, if not like a handful of things that you can either look more into yourself. Like, you'll actually have the name for what to look for, right? And that goes a long way. Or some things for you to experiment and try, knowing that some of these things might not fully work for your child.
That's fantastic. That's great. Yeah. I think as OTs, you know, we get caught up and we have an OT degree, and that means that we need to have a traditional OT job. We need to see a client one-on-one or in a small group. And I just love that you're taking your knowledge from OT and you're applying it to help parents in a very different way, but a way that is just as, if not more, impactful for them. So that's awesome.
Thank you.
So that was the program, the group program. Now, individually, do you see kids in person in your area? You're in Orange County area right now, Southern California?
I am. I'm in Irvine.
Okay. That's what I thought. I thought you were always there, but you mentioned earlier you're up in the Bay Area. So, okay.
I grew up here in Orange County, moved to the Bay, and then I'm back.
You had to come back. No,
I had to come back. Disneyland was calling me. I have to stay within earshot of that.
So I'm the same way. So how are you working with clients one-on-one? Are you working directly with children? Are you working with the parents kind of in the same way you're doing the group, but one-to-one, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So I am part-time at a clinic. It's not my practice. I'm an employee, a part-time employee at a clinic. I have a very small caseload just to keep my OT skills sharp. And I like to be in there actually working with kids. So I have a very small caseload, like one day a week in person. And then I have, for the OT Butterfly, I have one-on-one parent coaching style sessions. So it's either like Q&A, anything you would ask into Google, I will help you understand that. I help them with the language to advocate for their child with the school, with insurance, with finding a clinic, with family members. I help them understand a very like nuanced behavior and peel apart the layers and explain all the different things behind it. And I also have been getting more clients recently who just from a general perspective of like how to support their kid at home, how to handle like certain sensory-based behaviors from a discipline perspective, from like a parenting perspective, from a parenting style perspective, mm-hmm. which I've been really enjoying doing lately.
That's awesome. So are most of your clients within the group, or how much time do you get to spend with your one-to-one clients?
Yeah. So, I have a couple clients who are doing one-on-one and the program, and they like really like having that to refer to as like a resource that's always there, but then they really like the hand-holding like one-on-one uh-huh. time with me. But mostly I have my one-on-one clients are typically ones who don't fall into the sensory sensitive perspective because I have other courses for that, right? Or I have other programs. So the Sensory Wise Solutions is for parents of sensory sensitive kids. I have some parents of sensory sensitive kids in my one-on-one, but usually they end up in this program. So my consults are usually parents of just kids with anxiety, kids who they haven't figured out quite yet, kids who are having a hard time at school, kids who are sensory seekers. And so I guess how much time do I have for one-on-one calls? I have an open caseload right now. I don't have too many on my caseload because it's usually like either a one-off like Q&A, like, oh, uh-huh. I get a lot of the like, do I even need OT? Let me just like consult with you and talk about things. Okay. And then I'll say like, yeah, highly recommend like going and here's how you could find that. I have a lot of parents who are like, we talk about like, my child is having a hard time at school or sibling stuff. And then they'll book like 3 calls and we'll tackle at it from like a packaged perspective. I don't have a lot of like ongoing, like monthly one-on-one consult. It's very much a, here's the information, go with it. I'm here if you have more questions, but the most I will work with the family is like 3 to 5 sessions to like tackle mm-hmm. a very specific thing. And aside from that, I have like some, like I have a, one of my very, very niche areas is for clothing sensitivities. So I have a home program called From Stressed to Dressed. It's in like a PDF ebook, and it's basically the quote curriculum that I used in the clinic to help kids with clothing sensitivities that I used to like handwrite and cut out little things for them that I turned into a program once I left the clinic. So that is one resource that I send a lot out to parents and OTs who want to use it. Like I became the clothing girl at my clinic. Like every time we had a clothing client, the clinic director would be like, oh, she needs to work with Laura. Cause like, I just had all of these little ways to motivate them. So
that's so, awesome. Yeah. That's great. That's cool to see that you're able to help so many people in so many different areas in different ways too. You have the group, you have the book, you got everything.
Yeah.
That's cool. Now, one thing that I definitely want to ask you about, because as we both mentioned, we're big Disney fans. I haven't had a pass since they changed up the whole structure and whatnot. But I did see a few things come from you that you're actually supporting children with sensory processing disorders and their ability to go to Disneyland. Obviously, this is very niche. This is very Southern California or maybe Florida, but I think you also started this right before the pandemic. So it may or may not be going because of the pandemic, but what is this?
Yeah. So I actually started it in the pandemic. I started it when I got my pass. So I got the new Magic Key pass, like the week that it came out, like in August. And as I started going more, I was like, cause I haven't gone back since being, well, I have like a couple times, but not since I've been like started this, since I started the OT Butterfly, I had not been back. So now that I'm like always thinking of like accommodating and supporting parents, mm-hmm. I'm like, Disneyland is just so overstimulating, yep. which I knew. And I will go on a ride and I'm like, they didn't like that. Like who can go on that ride with a sensory sensitivity? And like, why didn't they tell me that? And like the Fantasyland rides are like the only ones that little kids can go on, but they are the most like the darkest, the loudest,
they are.
Like, oh, terrifying.
They're creepy.
And like we went on like Cars Land and that Radiator Springs. And I forgot that like that spray that when you're in the paint shop and you spray, I'm like, I know like 5 clients who would have fully freaked out with that. And like it's a millisecond of the thing. But like what you don't realize is that when your kid walks off of that or has this tiny little experience that you didn't expect, it like the rest of the day can go downhill if you don't know that and know what to avoid. And the app doesn't tell you, like, you might get sprayed by mist, because they don't consider that, because it's a tiny little part, right?
Yeah.
And what I was realizing with my daughter was that, like, getting her on the ride, like, I needed, like, from a, it's like energy conservation, but it's like sensory trigger conservation, like getting, like trying to limit what goes into her sensory threshold is like, I need to let her experience the ride for all of the like sensory, like triggers that it has. So every time, like between rides, whether it's on the line or like walking out of that, like she needs to be as accommodated and supported as possible. And I also need to, again, take that cognitive load out from her and show her videos of these rides, know what the line is going to be like, all of that stuff, so she doesn't have this like built up anxiety before even stepping foot on this ride. So I would go to Disneyland and like take videos for her and then come home and show them to her and then take her, because there was YouTube videos, but they weren't like accurate. They weren't portraying the line. Like those videos are like more specific to the attraction, and they like mute out the sounds of like when you're waiting in line or there's like music going over it. So I just took very raw videos of our experience. And then I was like, this needs to be a resource. This needs to be something for parents. So I very quickly was starting to put together this Disneyland for parents of SPD kids, this resource where I was rating all of the rides on a scale of like 1 to 5 for vestibular, sound, tactile, smell. And I'm wondering if there's something else that I was missing, but I rated all of it on like a scale of 1 to 5, how intense something is.
Yeah.
I also detailed like it's a lap belt versus a shoulder belt, or there's no belt, or all of the things that you don't think about, like the exit. Upon exiting, there's a really bright red flashing light outside of Soarin'. And I'm like, I know visually sensitive children. But, oh, that's the other thing. I rate darkness. I rate the darkness on a lot of rides, like how dark it is and then how loud it is. And also what kind of vestibular input is it? Like the Winnie the Pooh ride has some, it's like this awkward in between linear, but there's like half rotary as you're like sort of spinning halfway a little bit and you're rocking back and forth. The Haunted Mansion, when you have that inversion, like kind of like tip back.
Oh yeah.
Really hard for gravitationally insecure kids.
Going backwards too.
Yeah. Like they don't talk about those things. And again, I've seen, and I've heard from many people who have DM'd me after, where they're like, I'm scared to go back because the first ride I went on, I was not expecting that. And the rest of the day was like an SHIT show because they were just dysregulated for the rest of the day. Wow. So I was working really hard on packaging that together. I'd say it's like 70% done. It stopped. I couldn't go as often because of all of the pandemic stuff. Yeah. Like keeping my daughter safe became a bigger priority.
Of course.
And now my pass is going to expire in August, and I heard that they might not offer it again. So that's I've heard that they might not offer it again, and that's making me so sad. So I have this like half finished resource. I did like I might do this again because I've had a lot of parents ask. I might do like pop up Zoom calls for people who are going soon where I could just answer all the questions. But I use the DAS disability pass for my daughter, and that's been our saving grace that I encourage a lot of parents to use as well. And it's the only way that I can take my daughter there now.
I have a quick question. You mentioned an app and that the app has some information. Does it tell you any helpful information at this point?
It will say like dark thrill rides, or like it will say like some drops.
Okay.
It won't say like tips back. It won't say there's like it'll say you can get wet on like some rides that like actually have a splash component, but like it did not say that for Radiator Springs because they don't think of that mist as like getting wet, right?
Yeah.
And then the other piece about it is like the Winnie the Pooh ride, which is very relevant for, you know, autistic clients. There's like a scene at the end with the birthday party and there's a thunderstorm simulation.
Oh, that's right.
The app doesn't say that. It just says like dark and scary. But like if you're like, oh, but my kid loves Winnie the Pooh, it's not going to be that scary.
Right.
But if that's one of your kid's triggers, that's a scary thing. Plus there's all those weird like clown things in Winnie the Pooh. It's just like it's a whole trip in that ride. But they don't talk about that. In the app either. So the app gives very minimal stuff. The one cheat that I say parents look for is look for the rides that are safe for pregnant women, because they have that. You can filter out on the app if you're pregnant or expecting. Mm-hmm. Those usually are the least vestibular intense rides.
Yeah.
If you're looking for vestibular input, that's the only cheat I found. But everything else, they just kind of group into like loud, scary thrill rides. And then there's some rides that they don't even mention that are scary that actually can be based on your child's triggers. And as a parent, I would like to know that there is a birthday party scene in the Winnie the Pooh ride or something, right?
Yeah. And at Disneyland, it's more than just the rides too. I mean, all the fireworks, Fantasmic. Everything. I mean, there's so many different things going on that have sensory experiences.
You can try to, like, I can understand if you're like, my kid is sound sensitive, we're not doing fireworks at all. Sure. Yeah,
that's pretty easy one. But some of the other ones. That's
an easy one to avoid. But there's other things you can't avoid. Those freaking bathrooms are like an issue, right? So having all of the tricks of like where the bathrooms have not an automatic toilet flusher.
Oh.
Or walking them through what a character experience is going to be like, which I liked their COVID precautions for their characters. It was much more sensory friendly for kids because they were all behind a rope. Like, you didn't have to worry about like getting up close to them, but now they're back to normal. So yeah, there's all of those like in between stuff that we forget about or that we take for granted when we have neurotypical kids and we don't remember how much of that just outside the ride stuff can contribute to our overload for our sensory kids.
Absolutely. Wow. So we're going to have to, well, first of all, if you're a Disney fan, you've loved the last 12 minutes. If you're not a Disney fan, hopefully you're still on. We're going to continue back to working with non-Disney people right now, but we're going to have to cut out the last, 12, 15 minutes and just send that to Disney so that we can see Laura on one of those Imagineer episodes that they got on Disney Plus going on right now.
That would be amazing.
Right? Oh man. All right. So I want to ask you four quick response questions. I didn't send these to you in advance, but they're really simple, I promise.
Okay.
One book every OT should read.
One book every OT should read. The Whole Brain Child.
All right. A YouTube channel that you appreciate because of they facilitate for sensory processing disorder, kids with sensory.
Oh, gosh. I haven't been on YouTube in so long, but the one YouTube channel I always go to for my clients is the Art for Kids Hub, just for like practicing 100%. Drawing. But like I haven't used YouTube for sensory stuff in so long.
You're creating your own. That's why. I mean, you just got all the videos for your own kid. All right. I agree. I use that one all the time. I think it's a great praxis.
I love that one.
Activity. Yeah. All right. So we did book, YouTube, podcast, same genre, but podcast.
Podcast.
Of course your own, but what else?
Well, oh yeah, no, not that. I've been really liking, so there's two, and this is all for parents. This is for parents, but OTs like to learn about what parents are learning about. So, Natasha Daniels, she has AT Parenting Survival. She focuses on anxiety, OCD, and sensory processing overlap, which is very helpful for me. She has her own kids experiencing that stuff, and she coaches parents as well. And, Dr. Becky Goodinside. I can't go wrong with her. I love her approach to parenting and teaching stuff. And sorry, I can't pick one. Mr. Chaz is leading. I forget what his podcast is called. Mr. Chaz's teaching and leadership podcast. I think he is a really, really good breath of fresh air. Teacher of teachers, but he uses conscious discipline and he's a cycle breaker and he makes you like think about really hard questions about your childhood and how it impacts the way that you are working and raising your own kids. And those three as a parent, I feel like I've won the lottery with
that's great
with free support by hearing that all of those things. If you have a neurodivergent kid or work with them, those are great outside. I don't listen to OT podcasts as much anymore because what I've found that has bettered me as a businesswoman and as a parent and as an OT is by learning from other professions. Mm-hmm. I think I got so tunnel vision to a lot of OT podcasts, which I love too, especially at the beginning. But now as a parent, hearing other approaches, it's so helpful.
Gosh, stop sending my listeners away, Laura. No, just kidding.
click out of this.
We got a little bit of both. We got a parent and an OT on right now. So that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. One more. This one is a little more direct and relatable to you. I want to ask, the significance behind the lovely art that you have everywhere, because it's pictures of Liliana, but it's a very much different representation. So share a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I shared this earlier when I first started TPT, I was like, I'm bored. Like, I need something to do. And I got really like obsessed with it. So also when I get really engrossed in my work, I have a hard time like doing any self-care or like practice tasks or self-care tasks or like just relaxing non-work tasks. And last summer I just was working so much, but I was like, I need something else. But my hands really wanted to be busy. I kept trying to watch my favorite shows and do all the things, but I was still pulling my iPad and my computer out to like work. I just could not stop. So I got this iPad and this Procreate app where you can draw. And I just really love like drawing and doodling and stuff like that. And I found a way, I learned how to create like these faceless portraits, which is I think like a newish style I've seen out there of other people. So I started doing that with my daughter's stuff. And I liked that it kind of branded my Instagram without always me putting like the OT butterfly on it. Mm-hmm. But I also really love the faceless portraits because it kind of feels like less identifiable. And you could almost see like you could relate, like that could be my child, right? Mm-hmm. But so every time I am feeling like this creative urge, but I'm trying to like separate myself from work, I'm trying to relax, I will pull out my iPad and draw and do more pictures of her. And I just keep adding that to my content and it like kind of, it checks off my productivity tab and self-care at the same time.
That's great.
Multitasking. I hope my therapist isn't listening because she's always trying to tell me to like separate it, but I feel so much more fulfilled when some of my self-care tasks can also go back to my work. So a little bit of both. So when you see me have a bunch of new Instagram story templates and like pictures of her, you know I've been on this like, quote, trying to do the self-care thing.
Right. That's funny. I'm the same way with Canva. Canva is like, I'm doing work, Canva's, but I'm not really doing work.
Right? Like sometimes I'll like have a really good show on. My husband and I have these like background shows where it's like, you don't have to pay attention, but you love having it. So we have our set of background shows and I'm like pulling them out. I'm like, am I going to draw tonight or am I going to go on Canva and like mess with like a new template or my website design where it's still work, but it like feels creative and fun.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Totally understand it.
Yeah.
All righty, Laura. Well, that is fantastic. I totally thought that you had those made. Like, I thought you had a graphic designer making all of those. I had no idea that it was you. So that's
really cool. It's all me. It's all me. And it's really fun. I love doing
it. Yeah. That's awesome. It's a great way to get away from without getting away.
Exactly. Great.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming on. Before I let you go, where can people learn about you and the OT Butterfly?
Yes. So as Jason already said, I am all over Instagram at the OT Butterfly. My website is theotbutterfly.com. And on there, you can find all of my podcast transcripts that are kind of turned into blogs. I also have some blogs on there. And that's where you can find more about my courses and my one-on-one. And my podcast, if you just want to listen straight on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, it's it's a SensoryWise Solutions podcast for parents. And I'm going to shout out Sarah Putt, OT for Life, because she helped me get all of that off the ground last summer. And I'm almost reaching my 1 year mark. And so Sarah, if you're listening, thank you. She's also the person who popped my podcast cherry. She was the first podcast I was ever invited on to speak. So I know that you guys awesome. Talk a lot together, and anyone listening should also listen to her podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sarah has been on the podcast a few times now. She actually hosted my 100th episode.
Oh my gosh. I love
just it. A few weeks ago. So it was amazing. We all love Sarah here. And that's so, awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you, Laura. I appreciate having you. I appreciate your time today. And I look forward to seeing all the parents, all the kids that you are going to help over the many years to come. I appreciate you sharing that a little bit about that with us. So thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks everyone for listening.
All right, everyone. That was Laura Pettix from the OT Butterfly. Please, please, please do go check her out on Instagram and her website. Even if you don't need her course, because you're an occupational therapist and you don't have a child yourself with sensory processing disorder, go check it out. She just has so much good stuff. She also has a bunch of free resources if you just subscribe with your email. So all of that is going to support you. As she mentioned, you know, she started with a TPT, a Teachers Pay Teachers, which I know everyone listening as a school-based OT has gone on to TPT. So she really understands occupational therapy. And as you also heard a little bit about her child, Liliana, she is really starting to understand school-based services, maybe not OT yet, but understanding 504s and all of that great stuff. So yeah, be sure to check that out. And with that, I'm going to say so long for today, and I will see you in episode number 105 on the OT Schoolhouse podcast. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the OT Schoolhouse podcast. For more ways to help you and your students succeed right now, head on over to otschoolhouse.com. Until next time, class is dismissed.